Among the consequences of the pop conservatives' anti-intellectualism is the virtual abandonment of ideas which in the not-too-distant past were at least affiliated with the conservative movement in the United States. These ideas include the maximal liberty of the individual from government interference, the limitation of government size, and the desirability of free, unhampered markets in goods and ideas. One of the primary reasons for these ideas' abandonment is that they require a well-developed intellectual groundwork to understand and appreciate. The entire case for liberty is non-particularist. It does not depend on any given set of individual preferences or goals, and by itself, it does not guarantee the fulfillment of any individual preference or goal. Rather, liberty sets in motion systemic tendencies that facilitate improved non-coercive preference fulfillment for virtually everyone, while minimizing harmful interference with every individual's attempts at flourishing. One of the characteristics of a non-intellectual or anti-intellectual mindset is the inability to conceive of any regularities beyond immediately perceptible events and stereotypical common wisdom, and any means beyond the most direct for the attainment of one's goals. The pop conservatives and their constituents have exhibited this deficiency in their abandonment of support for liberty and their replacement of it with particularist agendas to enshrine their own moral values by a combination of legislative fiat and private coercive actions. Even when the rhetoric of liberty and free markets is not dropped by the pop conservatives, the substance and the understanding of these ideas is. The best illustration of this tendency at work can be found in the George W. Bush administration of 2001 to 2009, which has enacted unprecedented growth in both federal spending and federal power, even when foreign policy is excluded from consideration. And all of this despite the administration's nominally free market platform. The Bush administration was quintessentially pop conservative in its lack of hesitation in spending vast amounts of government money to directly achieve particularist goals, evidenced by anything from massive government contributions to faith-based organizations to Bush's support of a then unprecedented economic bailout. No person who truly understands the principles of the free market would believe that the survival of particular firms or business models is necessary to save an economy or keep it prosperous. Rather, a free market advocate would trust the spontaneous order of billions of human interactions to generate an outcome that is much more consistent with the flourishing of every individual than a centrally coordinated plan could ever be. Although they sometimes employ free market rhetoric, pop conservatives are only fair-weather friends of liberty. They will unhesitatingly enact colossal infringements on freedom when they consider their particular preferences to be threatened by the free association of individuals. Moreover, when they personally assume power, the pop conservatives do not act as limited government proponents. Rather, they most often consider themselves to have the prerogative to do whatever is not explicitly forbidden, and even some of that which is forbidden. Consider, for instance, George W. Bush's notorious use of presidential signing statements, through which he blatantly announced that he would interpret laws contrary to their letter and to the intention of their authors, and even at times declared that he would not enforce certain parts of bills he himself signed. Or consider Sarah Palin's infamous remark as mayor of Wasilla, Alaska, to a city council member upon spending $50,000 of city funds to redecorate her own office. "I'm the mayor. I can do whatever I want until the courts tell me I can't." Pop conservatives do not believe that the limitations on government power should apply to themselves when they hold office. Quite frequently, pop conservatives merely use the rhetoric of limited government to gain support from a constituency that is somewhat sympathetic to such ideas. Once elected, however, the same people do not hesitate to outspend and outregulate their more intellectually honest, open advocates of government growth. The most recent Republican presidential ticket of John McCain and Sarah Palin illustrated clearly Just how far pop conservatism has pervaded the approach of the Republican Party and the sympathies of much of the Republican electorate. McCain, despite a half-hearted advocacy of tax cuts and liberalization of oil drilling, spoke out in strong support of the TARP bailouts, carbon taxes, and cap-and-trade schemes to ineffectually reduce fictitious anthropogenic global warming, more government spending to foster, quote, voluntary community service, greater government interventions in the healthcare system, and a promise that, quote, there will be more wars, while existing foreign entanglements might have to be kept up for 100 years or more. Palin demonstrated complete ignorance of the Constitution's limitations on government power when she suggested that the vice president was given, quote, strong powers by that document. Moreover, she showed an egregious lack of historical knowledge when she said of the Pledge of Allegiance, if it was good enough for the Founding Fathers, it's good enough for me. A favorite tactic of the pop conservatives is to claim that they support the free market in general and are even disappointed in having to advocate government intervention in the present situation. But this time, the free market and individual liberty alone cannot save the situation. Of course, this pseudo-pragmatism is exhibited not just every now and then, but constantly, because the present is always this time at which free market principles allegedly need to be abandoned. When examining the policy records of such pop conservatives as McCain, both Bushes, and Palin, one rarely sees a time when specious considerations of expediency did not trump freedom.